Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know my computer screen?
Mm-hmm.
Is peeling. I've Googled it and it's called like Mac screen gate or something. And at the moment it's kind of okay because it's just all around the edges. But it's starting to encroach on the screen, which means you can't actually see.
If it's a Mac thing, if it's a Mac issue, they'll do it for you for free. Just go
really?
To
either that or people have to start Venmoing me money so I can afford one. You know Venmo?
No, I don't know Venmo.
Venmo's like where people can like send you money and stuff, but people always, you know, when people's tweets go viral and stuff, they're usually like 18 or whatever, and they're like, I'm broke, Venmo me.
Really?
Yeah, it's funny.
So it's just free money. They send you money for nothing. They don't expect anything in exchange.
I think like young creatives, like artists and stuff, will
sometimes
so be
like patronising. It's like
yeah, I think so.
Days.
That as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Artists years ago used to get just free money for
Venmo
from patrons.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Yeah, it wasn't called Venmo.
No,
but it's free money. Well, I mean, what does Venmo stand for?
It's owned by PayPal. Right. Can transfer funds to others via mobile phone app. Both the sender and the receiver have to live in the US. Venmo is a type of payment rail. It handled $12 billion in transactions in the first quarter of 2018.
But you have
That's
to live,
a lot.
You can't get Venmo'd money because you have to live in the US.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is the 46th one that we've ever recorded, the 46th of these podcasts. So we'll start traditional style. We'll try out a few jokes. Maybe Hitler wouldn't have been so grumpy if people hadn't left him hanging for high fives all the time. Yeah, like that. Rhys James, that is. Here's one for you. I think the worst thing about driving a time machine is your kids are always in the back moaning, "Are we then yet?"
That's not, it's not laugh out loud,
no,
ha 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 funny,
it's
but
clever.
It's clever, yeah. I appreciate it. I don't want to say that it's not funny.
No, well, that was from Paul F. Taylor. I don't know him. Robert Granum, here's one of his jokes. Insomnia is awful, but on the plus side, only three more sleeps till Christmas.
Oh, that's funny.
That's funny. Good. You're a bit like that character
in Seinfeld. Yeah,
in Seinfeld, who just never laughed, just said, that's funny. Okay, we're ready to go?
I mean, yeah.
You're going to France on a French exchange for a week. We had a young lady from France came over here. You're going over there. It's a very sexist place, France. Did you know how sexist it was?
No.
Well, here's...
Please do tell.
I will tell. There's a headline here. It says Sexism. Yeah. Sexism starts with morning news in France. Women are portrayed as stupid, incompetent and naive on the morning radio news in France.
Yeah, just watch Good Morning Britain. Susanna Reid is portrayed as the same.
According to an official report, in its first assessment of sexism in France as a whole, the Higher Council for Equality, whatever they are, the HCE, the Higher Council for Equality.
That sounds made up.
It does, but apparently it exists. Said that stereotypes perpetuated by leading radio stations nurtured a culture in which harassment could flourish. Detractors said the report was influenced by British and US feminists whose ideas were incompatible with French culture in which seduction and sex have never been taboo subjects. All politicians there, you know, traditionally always have a mistress and nobody bothers about it much in France.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a big story.
It's different culture, isn't it?
The council was critical of comics such as Laurent Gérard and Nicolas Canteloup. Regulars on the French equivalents of BBC Radio 4's Today programme. Radio stations referred to women by first names and men by surnames, which we used to sort of do over here quite a bit.
Yeah.
Alba Ventura, a political commentator on RTL Radio, which employs Gera, said, "As a woman, I say that comics have the right to make sexist jokes. It makes me laugh." So what do you think of that? The French, sexist.
Yeah.
And you're going to study. In fact, you might even have to go over there for a year.
Well, I will have to go over there for a year.
If you get into university.
I think that it's just because, I don't know, maybe because the French are more...
It's a different
more
culture.
...more chilled out, so they don't care as much. Hmm. Or maybe it's because women, they're allowed to make jokes about women because women are actually seen as equal. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think so. I think the French get away with it because we say, they're French. The people who are in favour of what goes on in France, basically, are saying the report was influenced by British and US feminists.
Right.
And what I'm saying is that in Britain...
Well, they think we're ridiculous anyway, that we get so het up about stuff, don't they?
Precisely. What do you think? Do you think we're ridiculous because we get so het up about stuff? Or are you on the side of these British and US feminists?
I don't know.
Yeah, you see, well, that's a quandary
Maybe.
For you, isn't it? That's
yeah.
a quandary. But as we've opened up the subject of comedy... You know, I sometimes say, it's very difficult these days. And you say, no, it's not.
Well,
I
honestly, genuinely
you're in the
don't
UK,
think it
France,
is.
France, it's not.
No, but... I don't think it is difficult. I think that, and also people are like, oh, you kids don't find anything funny anymore. No, we just don't find racist things funny.
No, I'm not talking about racism, all sorts of things.
Or sexism,
everything.
Or ableism.
Yeah, sexism, racism, ableism, transgenderism, you know,
yeah.
everything's.
If you can't make a joke without.
The only thing that is acceptable.
No,
now,
you're going to say it's ageism, and that's
ageism
not true. That's not
absolutely
true.
Absolutely true.
That's not true.
Yeah,
it's very Piers Morgan because he said that ageism, and it's just you see it because you are older.
There's an old Croatian proverb which goes, "Even the blind hen occasionally pecks a grain," and basically what it means is that if a blind hen is going around very occasionally. The fact that it's like, say, a stopped watch is right twice a day. It's that sort of thing. Just because Piers Morgan says something, occasionally he will be right. It doesn't mean
no,
he's automatically
I think that you
wrong.
I'm not saying that. I think that
well, you, were,
you see...
You
yeah, okay. I think that you see ageism. No, I think ageism is a thing, but you only acknowledge the ageism because you're older.
No.
I'm talking about humour.
It's very sad. I do it myself. It's safe to make jokes about ageism. You know, you can talk about the Rolling Stones. Oh, there's Mick Jagger. He's 107 next birthday or whatever. You can,
that's not ageism, though.
No, well,
you would get away with saying something of that degree. You would get away with saying something of that degree about women or about a race issue.
No, people would say about the Rolling Stones, oh, their album, Gimme Shelter, it's been remade, Gimme Sheltered Accommodation. It's you could say
that's not ageism.
No, but what I'm saying is it's quite safe to make jokes about old people. You can't make jokes.
People still make jokes about women, Dad.
This is an article in The Guardian. Sophie Hagen is a Danish comedian. I've actually seen her. She's quite good. But she's a Danish comedian who agrees with you. She says, when comedians say, oh, you can't say anything these days, what they are actually saying is, I don't know how to be funny without stomping on people. She says, a lot of comedians do, and they're doing well based on that. So they're doing well based on the fact that they can... that they don't stomp on people, for instance. And then she lists a whole load of comedians who aren't funny, several of whom I'm seeing. One funny one, a lot of extremely unfunny ones. Oh, there's loads of them here. I'm not going to read them all out. But anyway, she says, it sometimes takes a bit of extra work. You have to be aware of your own privilege and you have to educate yourself so you don't use damaging language. Okay. Then they go on about Louis C.K. Then it says, it was as if C.K. had reacted to the new wave of wokeness. There's a new wave of wokeness by... so all those comedians they mention are all woke. As long as you're woke, it doesn't matter if you're funny or not.
To
the new wave of wokeness by indicting political correctness. There's a new generation of comics. This is an article in The Guardian by Stuart Jeffries, their comedy critic. There's a new generation of comics retaliating against the old template of comedy. And then it mentions there's something called the LOL word, which is a comedy night, brackets for queer women and non-binary performers, and FOC it up, fuck it up, as standing for femmes of colour. Sophie Hagen is emblematic of this new kind of comedian. Last year, she demanded that every venue on her Dead Baby Frog tour was, quote, anxiety safe. meaning audience members with anxiety could be allowed into the venue before others arrived, or be warned of any words or topics that might be triggering for them. Is this ridiculous?
So, well, some of it. So some of that is too far, I think.
Okay, fair enough.
Probably, some of that is too far. But having nights where it's women, non-binary women, LGBT. What was it? Women who were non-binary and women who were...
Whatever, yeah. Non-binary queer women, it says.
And queer women. Some nights like that are important because they provide safe places for women who were like that to speak because they wouldn't feel safe in the very... You've got to say that comedy, as much as people like this Sophie Hagen are doing stuff, comedy is still a very macho arena and it's still very... It's a very male...
Yeah, I think I think you're right. I think if you go to places like the Comedy Store, definitely.
Yeah, and still on things like 8 out of 10 Cats and those Would I Lie to You and those things, it still is overwhelmingly men than women. And it's also women who look, you know, people like Catherine Ryan. I think she's hilarious. I think she's really, really funny. And I think when she first did 8 out of 10 Cats, she got loads and loads of material into it, and she was really, really, she's really good at those talk shows. But I don't think she would have done as well if she'd have been queer or non-binary, because she looks the part as well.
Okay, well, is this the future of funny, the article says? Perhaps it's the only way to survive. A comic Dame Baptiste thinks it would be detrimental to a comic's career to plough on with problematic humour. When it comes to how people balance freedom of speech, there is perhaps a generational divide. We're coming to the ageism. The received wisdom would probably... This is comedy writer and actor Liam Williams, who I've never heard of. It's a quote from him. The received wisdom would probably be, though it would be complacent just to assume that any backlash to increased nuance, consideration and empathy in comedy is just coming from nearly dead Daily Mail readers. So older people are described as nearly dead Daily Mail readers.
Not all older people, so they've got about...
Well, that's what... But it feels perfectly okay to... If I said... stupid women or blondes or whatever.
But it's because of the power. Like, you can't... There's a reason why you can say... People can say things about older white men. And it's because they don't face oppression in the same ways as women and people of colour do.
That's just a swipe. That's nearly dead Daily Mail readers.
No, the so same that's thing not, that's say not right. Brexit. To say that is not right. And you shouldn't have, and he shouldn't have, like, he shouldn't have said that. And to make constantly ageist jokes is not funny and it's not okay. But there is a reason why you can make jokes about older white men and you can't make them about female women of colour. And it's, do you know what I mean?
I can see all that, but I just think it's emblematic that in the middle of an article, which is all about what you can't say, they just quite casually say, yes, it's not just nearly dead Daily Mail readers. I would just be described as a nearly dead Daily Mail reader, even, you know, because... to the manage to get a swipe at the Daily Mail as, you know, oh yeah, Daily Mail, let's make a joke about the Daily Mail, let's make a joke about Piers Morgan.
Piers Morgan's a controversialist. He's also rude and manipulative.
He's already blocking me on Twitter, so...
No, but he is also, when he's on Good Morning Britain, he's rude and he takes vulnerable people and puts them into, and fights them into a corner. Like, I don't just not agree with what he says. I honestly think he's a bad man. I think that the way he acts is completely inappropriate, and I think he's extremely rude to Susanna Reid, and I think that to be in that kind of position of power, I'll tell you what, you wouldn't find a woman in that position of power, because when Katie Hopkins went to... So she's always been controversial. She had a column in The Sun, she had loads of controversial things, but she took it a step too far, which Piers Morgan has already done, and now she's been cast aside, fair enough, but... Do you honestly think that a woman could act the way that Piers Morgan does on Good Morning Britain?
Well, now, your friends in the Corbynite wing of the Labour Party claim that Fiona Bruce acted that way to Diane Abbott on Question Time.
Do you think so?
No, I don't think so. I thought she was perfectly fair. But
yeah, I know, but...
People are going, yeah.
But Fiona Bruce did not act the way that Piers Morgan does.
Well, they're saying... I don't think she did, but they're saying she did. Do you not see the controversy?
Yeah, but then that's another... No, I saw the controversy about it. But then that's another example of how Fiona Bruce, obviously anyone who was following David
Dimbleby,
yeah, that's right. Anyone who was going to be following David Dimbleby, who'd been doing the show for what?
Oh, yes.
25 years or something ridiculous, and does it extremely well, was going to face scrutiny. But a lot of people were saying she faced more scrutiny because she was a woman, and people were instantly trying to pick out things that she did wrong because she was a woman more than they would have done with a man.
No, I don't think so. I think she got... I think people were glad that it had changed and it was a woman. I think people got fed up with David Dimbleby, and she got a very, very good reception from everybody, from all from all those nearly dead Daily Mail readers. She got a very, very good reception. The people she didn't get a good reception from was the left-wing Corbynite,
That was because she was good at it. Do you know what I mean? She got a good response because she was good at it. But before that, people were instantly, as soon as it came out that she was going to be it, people were trying to find things. Pick faults, but luckily she was very, very good at it.
So I'll tell you what I did see in a thing I watched on Netflix called The Last Laugh, which had Chevy Chase and Richard Dreyfuss in it. They were in a retirement home, and he was saying, Chevy Chase said, it was too many old people here. And they said, we don't use the O word these days. We don't talk about old people. Pre-dead is what we call them now, which I thought was a good joke.
Yeah, but I just don't understand what you mean, because you, on the one hand, you're saying, so do you think anyone should be able to make jokes about absolutely anything?
Yeah.
And that's okay?
Yeah.
But what if the jokes aren't funny?
That should be the rule.
No, but people
if
say
they're funny, they're funny.
Yeah, but sometimes they're funny, but only to a certain type of person. Sometimes people make jokes about black people or Pakistani people or something.
That's not happened for 40 years.
I
don't think
that's
happened for 40 years.
People have been making jokes about women.
In Benidorm, there are still comedians from the 70s.
In the last 5 years, people have made jokes about women.
Oh, you didn't say women. You said black people and Pakistani people.
Okay, so let's take women for an example there. You think that anyone should be able to make any jokes about women?
More or less, if they're funny. I mean, that is the rule, if they're funny. See, all that stuff...
But sometimes, what if they're only funny to men?
You know, when I look at the comedians that I grew up with, the Ken Dodd and Les Dawson and Morecambe and Wise and all those people, and let's mention Fawlty Towers again, because you know like that, and Monty Python, it appealed to loads of people, predominantly men, I'll agree. Well, it depends which one you're talking about. Monty Python was very male, but that wasn't because it made jokes about women. It was because it was a sort of humour that appealed to, like, sixth formers and university, you know, men who'd done A-levels, that sort of thing.
But I think though, that you can still say stuff that's funny. So In Between Us, I think, is a really good example of something. I think In Between Us is absolutely hilarious. I think it's one of the funniest comedies and one of the funniest, like, school comedies that's ever been made, and that is four boys, and the humour is very, I don't know, almost locker room humour, like it's that type of thing.
The In Betweeners is pre-Me Too, it's pre-Weinstein,
I watched that, I rewatched that now, and I never think that the way that they make, and because they do make jokes about women, and they call the girl who's played by Emily Attack, they call her Big Jugs or something like that, whatever they call her. But the humour towards women never feels malicious, and it never feels disrespectful.
Doesn't have to.
No, it doesn't have to, that's what I'm saying, but those types of jokes about women are fine.
How is it 10 years old? They were fine 10 years ago. They're not fine now. What I'm saying, I suppose, at the end of all this...
But you can still be funny.
Can I just tell you about this guy who, Russian comedian, his name is, Konstantin Kisin, who said he pulled out of a gig which he was doing for UNICEF on London School of Oriental and African Studies after refusing to sign a behavioural agreement form. The form stated, "By signing this contract, you are agreeing to our no-tolerance policy with regards to racism, sexism, classism, ageism, ableism, homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, xenophobia, Islamophobia, or anti-religion or anti-atheism." Kisin said, "I grew up under the Soviet Union. When I saw this letter basically telling me what I could and couldn't say, I thought this was precisely the kind of letter a comic would have been sent there," which struck me as an indication it's gone too far.
So there was an article about how the process in which you apply to universities, in which you receive offers, is absolutely mad, basically. The whole process was designed in which you get your offers before you've got your actual grades. You get offers based on predicted grades, and there's unconditionals and conditionals and firms and insurances and all that kind of stuff. And that was designed when less than 5% of the population went to university, and now nearly 50% of young people, rather than 5%, are going. So it seems ridiculous that we've still got the same system. And we're one of the only countries in the Western world that has the offers for universities based on just solely expected grades rather than any actual evidence. And so it means that students make decisions earlier than they need to based on stuff that's not tangible. And then if your grades don't match the offer, then you have to go to the weird thing of clearing, which is ridiculous because you end up taking offers from universities which you wouldn't have before, and just kind of ridiculous. And it also means that because it's based on predicted grades, you end up with a lot of students who are first in their generation to go to university. They end up with lower predicted grades than they actually should have because they're not expected to do as well, and they apply to universities which are below.
Yeah, they could get into better universities.
But then they take these offers based on predicted grades, actually end up getting better, but end up going to the predicted ones anyway. And it also means that kids who go to private schools, where they're always pushed to get the highest grades, will be predicted grades better than they should actually be predicted, whereas kids in state schools weren't. And so then they end up getting places.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Why don't they just change the system? And
because I think that they couldn't.
What are the advantages of this system?
So this system, I can't see any advantages. That's why I thought it was an interesting story, because I never really thought of it. I just assumed that that was the best way to do it. But when you think about it, it is absolutely wild that we get into universities.
It's a time thing, I presume, because they can now. You're offered.
But in
you've got your university offers.
Yeah, but in
they know in advance, more or less. You know,
who's
because
you're
predicted grades, they know in advance the numbers. So they
but
know
in America, they do SAT tests. So one of the reasons that they have to base it off expected grades is because we do so many like big essay subjects, or even if you do maths and stuff, each question requires like a lot of answers rather than just a one number answer. So the marking, there's loads and loads of it to get through, and there's just not the time to do it before to get the word back to the universities and release results and whatever. But the way they do it in America is they have SAT tests, which is like scratching the boxes, and it's just like they're all like multiple choice, or they're like single words and stuff, so they can mark that, run it through computers and mark those really, really, really quickly. And then they can get offers. But now, I don't think that they could ever change the system, really.
No, but you've got offers, as far as you're concerned, you've got offers from a few different... I mean, you're like a Premier League footballer in that... well, I took a phone call from Birmingham University the other day. People are, you know, just a chat.
Yeah, but I don't want to go to Birmingham, just saying.
No, fair enough.
Birmingham.
So it's interesting because you've got an offer from... an unconditional offer from York... And you've got a conditional offer from Lancaster, is it?
Well, I've got an interview for an unconditional from Lancaster.
From Lancaster. And you've got to make a decision between York and Lancaster, which
probably,
is...
Probably, yeah. I mean, I've got an offer from Durham as well, but I don't think I'm going to take that.
No. So that'll be interesting, won't it? With you? What we could, I was hoping to do was put... Because you are like as a Premier League footballer, should you go to United or City, it's between York and Lancaster... ask anybody who has been to those universities. So it's a public vote.
You wanted to make a spreadsheet and then just have rankings.
See,
and then,
yeah. But if you went to either York or Lancaster, have any specialist knowledge, do send us an email, because you're weighing everything up at the moment.
Yeah, I've not visited Lancaster yet, in fairness.
That's right, it's true. But it's modern languages you want to do.
Yeah, modern languages at Lancaster, but modern languages isn't a course at York. So at York, it would be French and Spanish.
And at one stage, you were sort of thinking a bit about Bristol.
But then everyone committed suicide, and I decided against.
Well, there
no,
were.
It's just a bit too southern.
Southern, yeah. But
I picked all universities above. I just drew a line, and then I was like, I'll just go up.
But if you were to go to Bristol, the good news at Bristol is that university students there are being offered bubble wrap to help to soothe their nerves. Because they've had a lot of problems with stress and everything in Bristol, they're being offered bubble wrap. The wrap is included in stress relief packages being handed out to undergraduates at Bristol University. The packets come with instructions saying, for immediate stress relief, pop 3 capsules every 4 to 6 hours or as needed.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
We've got dogs, like guide puppies or something, coming into college.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know whether it's helped with stress, but we've got guide puppies coming into college.
Oh, that's nice. We'll take a short break and then have a quick look at the emails.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, I've asked for emails for people to so you can help you choose between York and Lancaster if they're the two that are remaining. So if you want to contribute to the York-Lancaster postbox, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. That's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. Stephen Marslin sent us an interesting one, Ruth. He said he started listening to this podcast after hearing adverts for it in other podcasts.
Oh.
He says, I didn't know that these adverts, they do some good. He says, after listening to other podcasts and hearing adverts for yours, I thought I'd give you a listen. Not least because, like Simon Callow, I've appropriated a role in a stage play that maybe should have gone to a proper middle-aged Yorkshire man, not an East Midlander like me. Anyway, I thought that Ruthie, off the podcast advert, has a fairly strong accent. He says he likes the way you said, I'm wrong about most things.
I don't hear it either.
But he's spelt Murst, M-U-R-S-T.
Murst.
Yeah.
Do you say it?
Murst. Yeah, yours is slightly different, but he thinks... He's listening to our podcast to
get... Yeah, I heard it then.
He's listened to the podcast to get a take on the West Yorkshire accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
He says, I'm sure, like me, you don't believe you have an accent, but we do.
East Midlands. I like the East Midlands accent. I think it's nice.
Midux, that's what they say. Midux.
I can't do
Mine's a dreadful Leicester accent, he says. So I'm two podcasts down now. Brilliant. We've done 46. This is the 46th. 46th. He says, I'll continue.
See, I don't even start. I don't listen to things that have got more than 10 episodes because I can't keep up.
Well, don't say that. Anyway, he's using it as a learning aid. He says, so if I'm forgiven for taking a role that a Yorkshire person should have, I'll continue to listen after the play is over. Actually, if I could send you the script, you could read all my lines out secretly in the pod so he could get the West Yorkshire. He says, yours tongue-in-cheekily, Stephen from Grantham, and he's playing Joe in Amanda Whittington's Ladies' Day.
Oh.
Do you know that play?
No, I actually don't. But right, sir, if you want to send an email for next week, the email is martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. I almost said www. But no. Obviously not. Yeah, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. Do you have some music?
I think we should have some music. We'll start with yours. I've got an interesting one today. I've got one that's from the... What era do you think we're going to this
year? Oh, like the 30s or something.
The 2000s.
Oh, really?
Of the 2000s.
That's mad.
We'll play it is.
Do you want me to explain what mine is before or after? I'll say it's a song called Shadow Man by... No name. I don't know. I've never heard anyone say it out loud, but it's spelt No Name.
It is,
I think it might be like Naname or something, so could, I don't know. But it's featuring Felix, Smina and Saba.
How do you see? How do you love? How do you remember me
That's grown on me, that.
Yeah, you enjoy it because you said, oh, I'm not so fond of it. for some reason, when I do you, you go to be like a grumpy Yorkshire, like old man. But that's not what you sound like, really.
A Daily Mail read.
Yeah.
Piers Morgan.
Yeah, so it is by a girl. So no name. I don't know. I've never heard anyone say it out loud. She is from Chicago. She's Chicagoan.
Chicagoan.
And she was originally, she did open mic nights and slam poetry competitions, which is interesting because I quite like slam poetry. I watch quite a bit of that on YouTube and stuff. It's a shame you can't listen to it all because basically she raps as well.
Yes,
but
I heard
a lot of people have talked about how like articles and tweets and stuff, not people, you know what I mean? About how she raps like really softly and it's really pretty, but she says so much more than a lot of the shouty, screamy rappers do. Mm. And she's really, really brilliant and her lyrics are really good.
Okay, well, mine, as I say, is from 2010. How about that? This is relatively recent.
It's only 6 years.
Yeah.
I'll
play it first and then we'll talk about it. It's called Willie's Song and it's by Rayland Baxter.
Everybody loved him so he had a beautiful smile. A good rapport and a pat on the back. Got his name on the company plaque. But nobody seemed to know that Willie could fly. Oh, but don't you fly away, boy. Don't you fly away.
Well, that's a son sort of taking on the family business because his dad is called Bucky Baxter, who is a multi-instrumentalist and played pedal steel guitar.
Oh, you love a pedal steel guitar.
Absolutely love a pedal steel. And there's plenty of it in that song as well. Pedal steel guitar for Bob Dylan on various Bob Dylan tours and on a couple of Bob Dylan albums and plays loads of other instruments as well. Rayland Baxter himself is described as alternative country. That sort of covers it. He's from Nashville. Began performing in 2010. He was featured on a song called Shanghai Cigarettes by country musician Kathleen Rose. And he's had a couple of albums. And that's... I just thought it'd be interesting to have something from the 2000s just to show that I'm not totally lodged in...
Almost, but not completely.
Yeah, something from the 2000s that sounds like it might be slightly
older. Yeah, that's
older.
The thing, isn't it?
Well, I could pick loads of stuff that sounds like the Beatles, even, you know...
Well, I mean, a lot of the stuff, Oasis, but...
not just Oasis.
I saw some stuff that was really interesting. So, I like Oasis, but I'm not like... people are really fans of Oasis, but I've never really been a massive fan of Oasis. I do quite like the Arctic Monkeys. Again, not like super fan or anything. And I saw someone...
But for boys, Arctic Monkeys large.
Well, they're not really. I mean,
But they would have a mostly male fan base, would they, Arctic Monkeys?
Not really.
Kaiser Chiefs, those bands?
Kaiser Chiefs and Arctic Monkeys are not in the same stratosphere, but in terms of popularity. Anyway, and I saw someone talking about how Arctic Monkeys, and I actually agree with this, have reinvented themselves over and over again and have done that. Each album is really different and really good. Oasis have released, like, they released that one great album and then kind of it sounded like the Beatles anyway. They've not really done much after. I do love the stuff.
Noel Gallagher
and the High Flying Birds, I actually quite like their stuff. The stuff that Liam Gallagher's done solo, I wanted to like it a lot more than I do. This is some good news because I think the world is quite bleak at the moment and it's quite fractured.
It's always bleak, you know.
It's always bleak. But
people think it's bleaker.
But I think it's slightly bleaker. So I think 2000, everything... No, I think since... So wartime, bleak, not good at all. Cold War, again, not good at all. And then I think that generally the world has felt like it's improving year on year, even if some stuff is rubbish and some stuff is sad, but generally the world has felt like it's improving. But I think within the last kind of 5 years, the world's not felt quite as optimistic. And I've heard this from a lot of people, and I was at I do a thing where we, like a writer's forum thing, and we read plays and stuff. So we're reading a play which is set in the Warsaw Ghetto, and about how the plays like this are still so important, and because the ending, although it's sad and stuff, is actually quite hopeful, and I think it's important to have that. And they were saying, yeah, maybe it's important to have that in the last 10 years, the world's felt quite fractured. And I think that it's a general thing that a lot of people have felt, that the world is not as hopeful as it has
I think
been.
It's because we know more. I think the,
do you
the
think
thing,
so?
Yeah, I think the thing that's that induces pessimism in everybody, and I'm included in this, is climate change. I think the fact we know way more about how our behaviour can damage the planet, which is so much bigger than other
but
things.
But some people still don't care, and I'm not talking about caring in a stopping using plastic, stopping shopping, going vegan. I'm not talking about like making active changes because you care. But some people genuinely don't think about it.
But the world may have been happier, say, in the 1960s or the 1970s, when you would eat bacon and you'd have a bacon and egg sandwich, and you really didn't know much about how it was produced.
There was a naivety.
There was a naivety, which meant that you could be optimistic about stuff because you didn't think anything like that was going to change. But now, you know, just the act of eating a bacon sandwich, you feel to yourself, you know, because you know more about animal welfare, you know how, you know the damage that industrial scale farming does to the environment, all that stuff which we didn't know about. So I think probably one of the reasons we're less optimistic is the fact that the media is so more pervasive, you know, whether it's social media or the internet. The internet's a huge reason.
I think that like social media is just terrible for everyone's well-being. But I think there is a climate of despair, I would maybe argue.
Well, there's
and also people love, and I think that social media lends itself to that, because people love to be melodramatic on Twitter and stuff about how terrible their life is, and people share a lot more about how they feel all the time. So maybe it's that. Maybe everyone's always had these mental health problems and always felt really rubbish about themselves, but not had the platform to say it.
It could be true.
But, I don't know.
But also there's a fact that bleak stuff does make the news. And that's why misery memoirs, for instance, are so popular.
What are misery memoirs?
Misery memoirs are these books. We get hundreds of them in at talk radio, and they're basically memoirs written by adults who, as kids, were severely abused, had abusive childhoods.
Right.
And those books
are
sell so well, abusive childhood books.
But then, as a serial Holocaust novel reader, I think that some of that is because we believe, I think about how much your parents affect you in later life and stuff. I mean, if you've read the Philip Larkin poem High Windows, then you know that it's about how I'm not allowed to say the word, how your parents F you up. And I think that's
Responsible, because we are in the kids and family category now.
Because I looked on the iTunes thing to see whether we could still have explicit E, but you've got to have clean lyrics. But I think people love to think about how their psychological, you know, people love to think about how psychologically your childhood affects you or whatever. So I think that's part of that, the misery memoir stuff.
No, I think also people like to read misery memoirs because they feel a bit better about themselves. They think, oh, well, at least, you know, I haven't been locked in a cupboard for 2 years, you know.
Poetry, the figures are up. That's what that bit was.
Oh, right.
Because I was saying it's nice to have some good news. This is your good news. Poetry figures for how much people are buying poetry and stuff is way, way, way up. Been going up year on year on year, but 2018 has been like the peak forever. Uh-huh. Like, it's amazing.
Is that because of rap and things? And
there's some different theories as to why it's better, but it's been up. So there's one is that it's...
Is it about my friend Simon Armitage?
No, not really. So Rupi Kaur, have you heard of her?
No.
So she has like 3 million followers on Instagram. I have a book. She did Milk and Honey. Her poetry is very Instagrammable, which is one of the reasons they say that the form's brevity means it can be easily consumed on phones and shared on social media. One of the reasons they say about it. But yeah, she's got 3 million Instagram followers, and so her books have sold incredibly well. But also people like Simon Armitage and Caroline Duffy and all the old poets that, you know, Shelley and Yeats and Keats and stuff have all been popular as well. It's not just these newer poets, but the main audience who are buying the poetry now, and the reason it's shot up so much is because it's young people. And so one of the arguments that they say, one of the theories, is that young people are searching for meaning in this increasingly fractured world.
Right.
And it offers kind of an escape.
I thought the reason was young people couldn't quite cope with reading a full book.
Well, one of the things is that the form's brevity means it's more easily consumable, not just for Instagram and stuff, but also for the world. But I think that I always think about, when I think about poetry and why it might be getting more popular, W.H. Auden, who found fame online, Four Weddings and a Funeral. No, but W.H. Auden said a thing.
That's great. W.H. Auden of Four Weddings and a Funeral fame.
No, but W.H. Auden, who's a great poet, and who we watched a really good did you watch that?
Yes, I did.
That documentary about him was really good. Anyway, he said that poetry might be defined as the clear expression of mixed feelings, which is one of my favourite quotes. And I think that that's interesting because young people, especially a Generation Z, we talked very weeks and weeks ago. I said weeks too many times and it's annoying. Oh, we talked weeks ago about how Generation Z are, although they're more liberal and the most against transphobia and biphobia and all that kind of stuff, they're also the most conservative generation, and they're more conservative than millennials, and they feel very much pulled in different ways. And Generation Z maybe are buying more poetry because it's
mixed feelings.
Poetry is all about mixed feelings and conflictions and stuff. Conflictions?
Mm. Have you a meme of the week?
Yeah. Okay, so this isn't really a meme, and it's not really funny.
My God, you're selling this, Ruth.
So, it kind of is. It's like a text post. It's like a Tumblr text post that someone's put on Instagram or whatever. That's what I'm counting as memes now. And the meme police or whatever can come for me, but whatever. So this is Cinderella plot holes I'm tired of hearing about. One.
Cinderella plot holes?
Plot holes.
Oh, Cinderella plot holes.
Yeah. Plot, sorry. Number one. Why didn't her stepfamily recognise her? Because royal balls were basically the candlelit equivalent of clubbing in terms of both lighting and sheer numbers. Even if they were right next to her, they probably wouldn't get a good look, especially since it would have started after sundown. Also, she was the help. They probably hadn't looked at her in years. Number two, looking for someone based on their shoe size is stupid. See above. Three, was he going to have every size 7 in the kingdom try the slipper on? Prior to industrialisation, most garments were made by hand to fit the buyer's measurements, including shoes. It's why poor people only had one pair. It's a lot smarter when you consider that they would have fit her like a glove. Number four, you can't run down the stairs in heels. I know this is a misconception, resulting from historical revisionism and Disneyfication, but high heels were not originally women's shoes. They were worn by white men. Women wore slippers, which were basically ballet flats. So it's debatable. Number five, glass shoes don't make any sense. Okay, first of all, it's called the suspension of disbelief. And secondly, they're gold in every other version, but Perrault decided to change them to something else expensive. Number six, she just went to the ball to find a man. I know this isn't a plot hole, but listen. As the daughter of a widower, Cinderella would have been running the household finances and acting as a hostess if she hadn't remarried. By demoting Cinderella to a servant, her stepmother essentially guaranteed that she would never escape the house, because the only way for her to escape and maintain her status was to marry well, and no one was going to marry a servant. It was essentially the historical equivalent of your mum stealing your college acceptance letters out of the mailbox. Then someone just commented, "This was not an analysis I was prepared for, I'll tell you that."
It's very good, it's excellent. Just to remind you...
And actually, the thing about... This is the last thing that's a... It's the historical equivalent of stealing your college acceptance letters out of the mailbox. It's from A Cinderella Story, if you've seen that, starring Hilary Duff.
Thank you. A bit of extra information for you there. If you want to send us an email, martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to get some of the music in full, it's...
You go onto Spotify and you can search either Martin and Ruth, and that goes to our profile, or Ruthie, Me and My Dad, and that'll take you straight to the playlist with this week's songs and all the others.
Excellent. And we'll be back with episode 47 next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.